Why don't we take a moment and draw into the power that brought us here and keeps us here. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Yeah. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nice full belly. Everybody's ready to fall asleep, right?
Yeah.
I'm Nate. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Nate.
While I'm thinking of it, too, I just want to say thank you to the committee and everyone here just for being such gracious hosts and really making us feel at home here. And also for the amazing little goodie bag that was in my room when I got up there, because there's all sorts of good stuff in there. I had about a half a pound of organic raspberries last night before I went to bed, and they were fantastic. But anyway, steps 8 and 9. We made the list, right? We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. What I found was that there was obviously names that came up through the course of writing my inventory. And that's the one thing in there. It does say in the book, we made the list when we took inventory. To some extent, that's true, but in a lot of instances, it's actually not, because I'm actually... There are many, many situations in my life, in my experience, where I may not be resentful with someone. They may not have come up in my fear inventory. I may not have had, you know, sexual relations with the person, but I still caused them harm. So that's got to count, as far as I'm concerned. It's got to be included, right? So made that list. So I just start with my inventory, right? I start there because there's probably a pretty good indication of the people I've harmed by just reviewing that. But then really, taking the time to sit with God and ask, God, outside of what I have here, are there any other amends that I have to make? And I usually get my answers when I do that. And currently, it's always important, and that this it's just too relevant not to. When I originally got sober, went through the steps, did my initial amends, I did like any good alcoholic and did about 75% of them really strong. Right, and I had a pretty solid 25% left on my list that I never actually made amends to, and that actually became completely acceptable for me, which is the insanity that I'm here to share. At what point did I become unwilling to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol? If I haven't completed my amends, that's essentially what I'm saying in my experience, and that had happened, and it wasn't until 6 years down the road where I meet up with someone that asks me, you know, do you have any outstanding amends from past inventories? Expecting like a no, they're taken care of. It's like, yeah, maybe only like 20. Only like 20? What's wrong? Like, do you have any idea the halt that's been put on your spiritual growth because of those outstanding amends that are standing in the way of you and God? I was mad, is actually my first reaction. I was mad. How dare, right? Like, how dare he call me out on, I'm doing the best that I can. Oh, really? Really? Come on. Right? If I'm being honest with myself, I just absolutely made the decision that if the time ever came, if we ever cross paths, God will put this person in my path when it's the right time. That's an excuse for me not to do it. Right? That's my experience. So I just tucked those down to the bottom of the list, put them back in the notebook, and just went on living my life as though I had completed my 9th step. And I hadn't. And I'm here to be honest and vulnerable with you folks. That wasn't a point of pride. I wouldn't get up to podiums and say, I have a whole bunch of outstanding amends that I've never completed. So essentially, I was living out of integrity within myself. And whether it registered like that all the time, I don't know. But I will say, after getting grilled that first trip through, 6 years down the road, I understood the severity of what is actually on the line here in terms of the amends that I needed to make. So basically that led me to the point where, okay, I've got, you know, the three from my current year, right? Because let's be honest, the damage gets a little less, right, as we move forward. The tangible damage that I do to the people around me, to institutions, it gets a little less, right? When we first come in, we have just like a laundry list because it was just like tornado all the time, right? And whatever, I mean, it's not about quantity. You don't have to have 200 to be AA senior, right? I mean, you could have 10 really good ones and it could be the same exact thing. I guess that's the thing, the weight that these, the way I see it is that if I own amends to someone, something, some place, the scales within me are offset, right? I can't be fully available to do the work that God has for me to do if I'm still in debt with the world, with God's kids, with his people, right? Because I never know what's going to come from that. And nor is it my job. It doesn't have to be an earth-shattering experience when I make an amends, because what it says is we made the list and we become willing. I have to be willing. And the experience I just shared with you by having all those outstanding amends, I was not willing. Although I would have said that I was. That's the tricky part. Insane alcoholic mind. Two things happening at the same time. I'm absolutely willing to go to any lengths, yet I'm not. And that's the truth, right? I stopped doing my amends because it was convenient. Because I was scared in some instances. And because it was more of an inconvenience for me to try. Whatever run of excuses that I could give, the point is that I didn't do them. And so, of course, half out of fear of how I looked and half out of fear to save my soul, I went on an amends mission after that, right? And I knocked off those, I think, 20 amends that I'd been sitting on for 6 years in the course of like 2 weeks, I think. So really, I couldn't get around to it in the course of 6 years, right? That's all it took was a little initiative. And I could hide behind anything. Oh, it's geography. I'll never see them. If I'm never going to see someone in the flesh again, I can talk to them on the phone, right? I mean, obviously, best case scenario, face-to-face is a beautiful way to make an amends. But if I'm never going to be able to see that person face-to-face and I can get in touch with them some other way, it's been my experience that like it can have the same end result. I can still repair the damage that I've done and make the best attempt possible to make it right. Again, more opportunity to experience humility is what this really comes down to for me. It's my least favorite. It's my least favorite. But the thing is that that's where, for me, the transformation really started to become true in my life. I've never made an amends that I didn't walk into feeling like I was about to throw up on the floor. Just my experience. I get scared to death before I have to go and tell someone that I've been wrong. And I want to hear what you have to say about it, right? It's not the best situation to be in. It's terrifying. And without God, I can't do it. I literally don't have the power. I'll run from that stuff for the rest of my life. So to become willing, am I really willing? Am I really willing? And like I said, some of those amends that I was hiding behind for 6 years, they were like the most uneventful amends ever. In fact, you know, some of these people were like, I don't even know. Like, I'm just glad you're sober. That's it. You know? And I'm thinking, like, I had really just rocked the boat with this person. Because there's also, it's interesting. Has anyone ever approached the amends process and not been sure of actually what you're out to accomplish? Or been confused about what is it that I'm actually here to address? Or sat down and said, if I ever wronged you, I'd like to know about it. Because for me, fishing is not a good way to go about making an amends, right? I've got to know, did I cause direct harm? Because that's again what it says. We made direct amends when possible, right? Or whatever the exact wording is. I guess it's irrelevant. You understand. Go out there and make it right. And but I have to be aware of the direct harm that I've caused. And I can't, there were so many names on the first list that I came up with that some of them were still lingering when I got to that 6 year point and finally admitted that I hadn't touched anything. You know what? That's an interesting, now that in the spirit of honesty, I waited after a full year of actually being grilled, like I just explained. You haven't done your amends for, you know, I waited a full year and tried to pull the card that like, oh no, I still have ones outstanding for my original. And go figure, he remembered. We talked about this last year. How did you not make these amends? Right? I'm like, oh, I'm the worst day ever.
I'm really a very nice person. I just need you to know that.
Yeah. I'm just painting this horrible picture. He has a black hood with holes in it. I'm just, it's horrible. Executioner. But that's what I need, though, you know, because I am the one that will always settle for mediocrity. And I pay. I pay for it. By not making those amends, I paid. I paid because my spiritual growth was essentially on hold. I couldn't grow. I couldn't grow. I was stunned. And I wouldn't admit it. I didn't realize it. And that was when the two-week spurt happened, after I was that embarrassed a second time around. And then there are people who have experience where they go out and they nail every amends that they have right off the bat. And that's great, right? We all have our own experiences. I guess the point that's important to me is that outstanding amends are not okay. If I could really just wrap it up into one line that matters, for me, outstanding amends aren't going to fly for me or for anybody else. Because how can I sit back and say, I have damage done to God's kids that I haven't addressed, and I'm okay to just keep doing my thing and pretend like nothing's wrong and pretend like I'm not in debt with the universe at that point, right? And sometimes it can be really confusing, because again, my initial amends list had so many names on it that were, it was basically like half of them, or not even half, some of them were, there were people I really embarrassed myself in front of, right? So I felt this obligation to go back and just like repair my reputation. I didn't actually owe them an amends, I was just really embarrassed and wanted to show them how good I was doing, right? Then there were other ones that were women that maybe I dated in the past, I was single at the time, maybe it was an opportunity to go back and rekindle some old flames, right? Just being honest here, right? I mean, the motives that come through the amends process can sometimes not be so pure. So call a spade a shovel, like they say, right? And so for me, it was really, really nice, again, to have some guidance to talk through some of that stuff. Like, what did you do? What do you think you did that was direct harm to this person? And there have been a lot of instances where I was like, I mean, if I did direct harm to someone, I'm going to know it. I'm not going to really have to search that hard within me to figure out what it was that I did to this person. And again, a lot of the times, I don't want to go and just fish and just sit down and be like, did I do anything that hurt you? Because, I mean, if I did, that's going to be pretty insulting, right? How do you not realize the pain you inflicted upon me, right? We don't want to end up making amends for amends. That's never a good thing. And also, there are situations where maybe I did something, and by going and addressing it, I would hurt someone else worse. I'd basically be saving my own skin and throwing the other person under the bus. That's not okay either, right? Like, for me, a lot of instances were like, past girlfriends, right, that I had cheated on. One in particular that I'm thinking of knew nothing of it, never knew anything of it. Is it really my job to go back and interject myself in her life as it's moved on and say, by the way, remember all that other harm I inflicted upon you? I also did this. Just so you know, and you can really just stew on that, right, and think about it. It's like, what sense would that make? And that's not like a, it's not like a get-out-of-jail-free card. In some instances, it's absolutely necessary. Like, if somebody knows for a fact I caused them harm in that realm, I have to address it. But at the same time, I have to be very conscious not to put my own well-being above others, right? Can't be hurting other people through the amends process. So is the amends process scary? Absolutely. It's least far. That's what I said. Like, I remember literally going back to my hometown, and making an amends to this family. I walked up to the door, and I started to get woozy. I was literally white. I started to just do the wobble, like, am I really doing this? They're probably going to come out here with a 12-gauge in my face. That's what it felt like. And sure enough, like, I almost blacked out, and they opened the door, and next thing you know, I'm in there making an amends, and it all went fine, right? But I literally was having an outer-body experience. I was so scared before I did it. And there was this instance, too. Sometimes I'm making amends, for things that I didn't do, right? And for me, I had an opportunity to make an amends to my grandfather, who, I mean, this guy, he's a French-Canadian guy. I think he showed, like, you know, one inkling of emotion the entire stretch of life I had ever known him. And I just loved him, though. I thought he was just the greatest man ever. I loved spending time with him and being around. And then the time came where my love affair with alcohol became paramount, and I removed myself essentially from that relationship, from being around, from participating, and just being a part of his life. Even if it was in a very detached, kind of sit in the same room kind of way, it was still one of those things where, like, I didn't want to be inconvenienced with visiting the grandparents when I was getting just out getting hammered. I didn't want to do it, right? And the series of events that led up to it were pretty profound in terms of my grandfather was just the man of the house always, like, just old school. And my grandmother was just the sweetest little French woman you'd ever meet. She was, like, yay tall, just if I could nominate someone for sainthood, it would be this woman. She's just the sweetest person I've ever known in my life. And he was basically, like, this towering force. So later on in life, she gets Alzheimer's and just drifts and disappears, basically. And he has no choice but to be forced into a situation where he has to be compassionate in a way he had never experienced. So by the time that I had gotten sober and got a chance to, he was in a nursing home at this time, and I remember going and stopping in and just sitting down on his bed and being able to make an amends for him for my absence, for just removing myself from his life. It was what I didn't do, not necessarily what I did. He wasn't affected by my drinking. He never saw me drink. You know, it was just the repercussions and the damage caused by my relationship with alcohol that had an effect on him. And he absolutely knew what I was talking about. He said, why did I never see you? Right? I mean, and I'm being honest, I'm telling you know, like, I fell in love with alcohol, essentially. I wasn't that equipped with the truth at that point to say it like that, but basically I was just too busy drinking, you know, and if I could do it all over again, I wish I could and I would, and I'd do it differently. And through the course of that 1 hour that I sat there on that nursing home bed with him, we had more of an intimate conversation and connection than I had had through the entire life experience prior to that. He told me he loved me for the first time ever, right? He shared with me, again, this is not a man that opens up for anything. He shared with me how his very own brother died with no shoes on of alcoholism, and he understood. And that he just loved me, and he said, you know, maybe we didn't have a chance to do it and to have these kinds of conversations then, but we can now, right? Go figure, he passed away a week later, mm-hmm. right? Thank you, God, I had an opportunity to be there and to do that. Do I wish I had more time to do it now, like he said? Of course. But I'm 100% grateful that things worked out the way that they did and I had the opportunity to address that, right? And who knows, had that been one that got pushed to the bottom of my list, I would have never had that opportunity. So it's not a fear factor here to push us to do it. It's just the truth, right? Yeah.
Thanks, Nate. And again, I want to agree with what Nate said, this business of we have our list, we made it. When we took our inventory, there were, again, people on that list that I resented, I did not harm. And there were people that I harmed I didn't resent. So everybody that I harmed went on the 8-step list. Now, was done with me, and it's what I do with people I sponsor. I did not go out to make my amends without taking that whole list to my sponsor. And we went over each and every possible amend. Did I cause harm? You know, and there were ones that were taken off the list, and there were ones that were added to the list. You know, but it gave me an opportunity, again, to invite somebody else into the process so I'm not being the final determiner of what's going to go on in this thing. And I've had ones in working with people, I think there's very few that I haven't told them, I don't think you owe an amend here. We can get scrambled eggs for brains on this thing. And I wanted to share something with you. So, have you ever heard alcoholism called a disease of perception? So, I sit at a sewing machine a lot, and I'm sewing this row, and I'm an alcoholic and I'm a perfectionist. Bing, 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 and there's a stitch that's out of sync. I can't handle it. So luckily I'm married, and I take it over to my wife and I say, without telling her, I got a stitch out of her. I don't mind telling her, but I just ask her, how do you like this? She says, it's beautiful. Okay, I'm done. In other words, she needs to help me to not have my disease of perception take me to the cleaners. If it's going to happen with my stitching, what do you think is going to happen with my human relations? Am I making sense? I can get this blown up perception that I'm now, you know, Lizzie Borden. Do you know, and I'm Typhoid Mary. Why is it all women? Anyway, somebody else. Anyway. And it's not true. It's that I have this voice in me that said, if you're not perfect, you are terrible. I worked in a Catholic mission after high school down in Kill, Mississippi, where Brett Favre's from. And it was 1965, and all the freedom riders were going south, and it was a hell of a situation. It was a great opportunity. And one of the Catholic brothers down there said to me, unsolicited, he said, you know, Mickey, I'd like to give you a can of black paint and a can of white paint and send you out into the world. He said, there's no gray in your world. And it's true. Anybody else have that? Where it's just black and white, it's either one way or the other. Now that can be, we can understand how that could be harmful, and I'm sharing about how that can be harmful. But that can also be really great. Because we're living in an age of ethical relativism, you know what I mean? Well, it's sort of okay. You know, we're massaging reality. So I'm just saying it's not an all bad trait to have. But it helps me to go over it with my sponsor, and I help the people that I sponsor to go over it, and I truly recommend it to you. It's that sort of last, final check before you jump into making the amends. It's very useful. Making direct amends, I want to share one that's a little unusual. I had no real financial amends to make, so I can't talk to you about that. But I had to make an unusual amend to my mother. I grew up in a very violent home. And when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I could not understand why I couldn't fall asleep. I had to make a decision to go to sleep. Because if you fell asleep in my house, you were going to wake up, World War III is going on in the next room. I can remember going into my mother and father's room when I was 11 years old and my father strangling my mother on her knees and she's screaming to me to call the police. You know what I mean? And it's hard. And I can remember many nights when my big brother would come in and hold me in my bed because I was shaken so bad. I was terrified. So with my mother, who was like, I told you I wrote 6 years on her to get clear of my resentment against her. And what's interesting about God is that these are not the big blocks for God that they are for us. My father died before my mother, and I was going like, you know, I loved my dad. I worshiped my dad, hero worship. And my dad died first, and I had 6 years more with my mother, and she was a very difficult person. And I can tell you honestly, right now, look you in the eye and tell you that of the two of them, I miss my mother the most. God can heal unbelievable things. But because of what happened, I talked to my mom one time before she died, and I said, Mom, I need to tell you that you and Dad really hurt me. You really hurt me. I wasn't screaming at her. I wasn't trying to get revenge on her. I was trying to get the block between she and I out of the way. Am I making sense here? And you know what her response was? She looked at me and she said, Mikko, anytime you want to talk about this, you come and talk to me. And I put it off for the longest possible time. You know what I'm saying? Because in the technical descriptions of what we do, we can't get it well at anyone else's expense. But I had this standing between me and my mother, and her response was like, I was in awe. And all I did is tell her the truth. And you know what it did? Is it released the guilt in her. And it released the resentment in me. So it's not always going to be textbook stuff. Here's how I hurt you. What can I do? And so on down the line. That was one of the best things that ever happened in my life. I followed the dictates of the big book that says we have our list. We made it when we took our fourth step, made our fourth step. And so I had my list, and I was not getting good direction from my sponsor. And I headed out, baby, and I had that list, and I talked to everybody on that list until finally people are looking at me and saying, Mikko, what are you doing here? You did not hurt me. So there's a distinction here. I may not have liked that person. I may have hated that person. But I did not hurt them. So what happens is inside of me, and it can still happen, that I think you can hear my feelings. You know what I'm saying? I may be, you know, giving you the stank face or something, you know, but it's inside. And I think you can hear it. And you can't hear it. Now, I may be not the best social partner to be around or whatever. I'm not talking about hurting somebody. But I was trying to make amends, and I got all confused because they were on my list. So it's really very, very important, I believe, to check with our sponsors before we go out and make this very, very important point, this spiritual practice. Now, there's another aspect to this that I've found, and I'll tell you the story. I had gotten to a place in my first set of amends, and it was before the internet. Yes, there was a before the internet, even for young people like myself. Anyway, and I couldn't find these two people, so I just blew it off. I didn't blow it off for 6 years, but I just blew it off. I just, I'm sorry, did that hurt?
We needed a laugh. I'll take it.
What I'm saying is that it wasn't like lengthy. It was just something I hadn't done. So one night, I woke up. I'm sleeping next to my wife. I woke up, and there was something in that room, and I was absolutely terrified. I was so scared I couldn't even wake her up. I could not talk. There was something in this room. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning, and I am scared like the headless horseman is chasing me. And finally I did talk to Maria, and I said, man, there's something in this room. There's something wrong. And so I called Big Frank at 3 o'clock in the morning. And he was not my favorite person. But he was a man of power, and I needed help bad. And he lived not far from me. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, he goes, well, hi, Mikko. Oh, yeah? Come on over for a cup of coffee. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. Now I had to walk from my house about 5 blocks to get to his house. And, man, I was just like a little kid running from something drooling under the bed, you know. And I got over there, and we talked until dawn. We talked about meditative techniques and positions and postures. We talked about this. We talked about that. And I said, oh, yeah, and I have made these two amends. And he said, oh, my God, if you'd have told me that at the beginning, we could have gotten some sleep tonight. So I found out that the phone company had all the phone books from the country. And I was able to find those two people and send letters. Now, if we make an agreement with God that we are going to examine our souls with His help, confess our faults, make a list of people we've harmed, and then we're going to cheat at the end. Guess what happens? Our program rolls backwards because I did not do my part of the bargain in the contract. And it says in the big book, it says, we attempt to sweep away the debris which is accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So I noticed this, that now I've got this experience. Was it dramatic? Yeah. It was really dramatic. But what it did is it imprinted on me the importance of making all the amends that we can. If we can't find somebody legitimately, fair enough. We hold ourselves in readiness to do it if we can, whenever that, you know, opportunity presents itself. But I've seen people get up and all of a sudden they say, nah, I don't think so. And they go, no, I don't agree with you. I don't think I hurt that person. And it's like really right there in black and white. And I saw a guy do that, and I told him what I'm telling you. I said, brother, don't stop. Don't stop until you have been thorough and gotten this job done. He didn't listen to me, and he backed all the way out of Alcoholics Anonymous. Over pride. He didn't want to be embarrassed to go in there and talk to him about what he had done. So I just offer that to you. It's very important. Okay, I won't keep hammering on that one. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Did you say something?
Oh. I was going to, but I can hold it.
Go ahead, Nate.
I was just going to say, I feel as though, in the spirit of what we're talking about, it's worth mentioning as well that an amends, obviously, and a lot of people probably already know this, it's not an I'm sorry, right? An amends is an admission of wrong in a contract to change behavior in the future, as I understand it. I'm not going to make an amends if I plan on doing the same thing next week, right? Hopefully I don't ever plan on doing the same thing next week. But what I'm doing when I sit down and let someone know, like, this is where I've harmed you, you know, is there anything I've left out, right? Is there any gaps that I've conveniently misplaced? And then they fill in the gaps for me. It's a rather uncomfortable experience. And also, you know, providing that it's not morally or legally compromising, if I'll try to do whatever I can to make it right, right? If whatever they're willing to put on the table for me to make it right. But that's just it. It's in that, just to fast forward real time, I have to be careful about making amends to my wife that I'm actually done behaving the way I'm amending, right? If I even said that in the correct English verbs, whatever. Head is just bent. But so what happens to me is that my wife is also an alcoholic. She's also in the program. She knows what I'm up to. She's in the same sponsorship line as me, practically, literally. So we're working the same thing. She knows, right? And she's very quick to say, you just made amends for this last week. Right? Are you really sorry? Is this another sorry? Or are you actually telling me you're going to change your behavior? Then I'm thinking, because a lot of the time those amends are like conditional, right? Like, I was just making the amends. I didn't ask for any feedback, right? Not a good place for me to be, right? So the only way that I can do that, though, the only way that I can hold up my end of the bargain in an amends is through absolute, utter surrender to God. I don't have the power to change my behavior. Let me make that very clear. I don't have the power to do anything in my life, especially to do the right about thing and think and act like a gentleman, right? I can't do it. So it's very frustrating and confusing at times when we're, you know, in our current lives, or maybe I'm not going out and making the big, impactful amends that we all get to tell stories from our first list, right? Maybe it's just the ones that are coming up on a regular basis, right? And for me, I have to be conscious of that because I don't want to say that I'm sorry, right? Because when I'm making an amends, I'm essentially saying I was so wrong and I don't want to be wrong anymore. God willing, I won't act this way in the future. And that's 100% my intention. That's the truth, right? But if I'm not being honest with myself, I can repeat that behavior and end up right back in a place to the point where it's like, the amends doesn't matter anymore. Till I see you change, stop apologizing, right? Because a lot of the time that's exactly what it is when we talk about living amends in here. It means my behavior is going to change and it's going to be noticeable. I'm not going to get a gold star for it. I'm not going to get a pat on the head. I'm just going to be doing what I should have been doing in the first place. It's usually what it comes down to. Right?
Well, there's a little fly in the ointment there. And that is that I can have the intention of changing. I can have a firm commitment to it. I just don't have the power to back it up. And my wife and I live together and we work together. We are together 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I've repeated behavior over and over and over again. It doesn't mean that I wasn't sincere in laying that on the table. And I may have to grow out of that behavior. So I can't guarantee when I make an amend that it's going to be something I ain't going to do again. That's, you know, I wish I could. Anyway, I just wanted to put that on the table, too.
Amendment accepted. Strike the record.
Let's see, where were we? Okay. I had a guy that came and asked me to sponsor him in another state, and he was an armed robber. And I knew when he came to me that he was going to have to get that square. And the book says even if we got to face jail, we got to do it if we are going to have victory over alcoholism. So here we go. So we talked, and I can't honestly remember why technically he wasn't in jail. Because he had been arrested, he'd done whatever. But I said, you got to go make amends. So here's an amend I want to share with you. He robbed a Tibetan store. You know, they got the bells and the flags and they got all that in the Tibetan store. He robbed that store with a baseball bat. And he terrified the clerk, the woman who was there working the counter. Now he's got to go back and make the amend. So he goes in and he's talking to the owner this time. And he said, do you remember a few years ago when somebody did this thing? And he said, I remember. And he said, I'm the man who did that. Now that guy could have called the police and had him arrested. And here's what happened. He said, I did that and I figured that I took $300 from your store and I terrified your clerk. And I'm here to make this thing right. And he's got the $300 in his hand. And the man who owned the store said, no, I can't take that. He said, it will balance my karma if I don't. So I can't accept your money. And he looks at my guy and he said, do you meditate? And my guy goes, yeah. And he said, here's a tape that will help you meditate. We don't know what we're walking into. The point is if we're going to trust God, trust him. No matter what, here we go. Now, when I first got sober, there were these two people. One of them was ready to go and do time in the penitentiary for what she did. The other one ran. Okay? She got sober and stayed sober, and this guy never got sober again. Is he free? He's not behind bars, but he is not free. She faced up to it because we have to be willing to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. Now, it doesn't mean that we're cavalier about it. We need to talk to people. I sponsor a guy who owed the IRS $750,000 in back taxes. He was an accomplished drug dealer. He did not have to incriminate himself to tell them, I was a drug dealer. And go do the time in the pen. He's talking to the IRS. I calculated this and I owe you $750,000, which is a lot of cheese. And it took him years. It was eaten at him. It took him years to deal with this thing, because what's going to happen, man? I'm going to the pen. So he goes to the IRS. He talked with his attorney. He talked with them. And there was this moment in the law with the IRS, and he was in that window where they could make a deal. And they reduced the fines, they reduced the deal, and he was able to pay off what he could pay off. Again, God's kindness. Let's flip it. I sponsored a guy who went into a salvage yard, and the guy was doing salvage auto glass, and he went into that yard and he busted all the windows in the cars, drunk as a vandal as a kid. Now he's got to go back and make amends for this. He goes to make amends and he tells the guy, blah, 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 I did this. And the guy says, you know what? I am really happy for you, total stranger. I'm really happy for you that you're sober and it's okay. And the guy goes, no. My guy goes, no. I got to make amends for this thing. And the guy said, no, seriously, this is okay. And my guy goes, no. You get the picture? He would not let this man accept this thing in his own way. By the time he left there, that guy was so pissed off, he wanted to kill my guy. Last story. There was a guy in Los Angeles who was a cat burglar, home robber. And he did about 200 homes, and here we go. And he's got to make amends. So it's getting down towards the end of his list, and he's made all these amends, and he's like sick of it, haven't I done enough, and so on. But no, we got to be thorough. We got to do the dance here. So he goes up to this house one more time, knocks on the door, and he said, woman answers the door, and he said, you know when your house was robbed? And gives him the time frame. He said, I'm the one who robbed it. And I can't, it just chokes me up what we do. But anyway, he says, I came to make this right. And she stopped and she said, would you just wait here for a moment, please? And she leaves. And now he's standing out on the front porch. And she comes back to him and she said, would you please come in? And so she has him come in and sit down with her and her husband. And she says, I cannot tell you how much this means to us. We thought it was our son. And all these years, they laid this on their son, and it was done by this guy. So we never know, when we're out making amends, what's really going on with God and his world, right? And is it frightening? Yes, it's frightening. But I was watching a show recently on heroin addiction in the United States, and it's like an epidemic right now. And the recurring theme that came up in listening to these people was they wanted to feel good. They wanted to feel good. And when I got sober, this guy asked me, Mickey, are you in this for relief or recovery? It's a good question. If you're in this for relief, you're going to have a long walk, son. If you're in this for recovery, you can put relief on the shelf. We're going to live in principle. It may not feel good to do this work. It's like, do I want to feel good or be good? Right? Because have we noticed, whether we're a drug addict or an alcoholic, that every time we went to what we thought was going to make us feel good, it was worse. It was worse. But we keep that thought alive, that hope alive. Then we walk into some of these things and we feel terrible. But we just did a spiritual act that we're buying our soul back with. So I heard this, and I already shared with you, I didn't have financial amends. But in making financial amends, the thought was offered at a meeting one time, remember, it's not your money. It's their money. Right? It's a good perspective to have. Are we there, Captain?
I think we're there. We could beat it for a few more minutes, but I think we're there.
I think we can call it a game on that one. Oh.